Later today, public submissions close on what Australia's target for cutting carbon pollution should be beyond 2020. This is the new, higher and more expensive target that Australia will sign up for later this year at the UN climate talks in Paris. The aim is to avoid dangerous climate change, 2 degrees of global warming. We'll talk in a moment with Federal Environment Minister Greg Hunt about that big long-term challenge. In the meantime, $660 million of taxpayer money was committed yesterday to buying pollution abatement out to 2020. It started an immediate argument about whether the government has enough money on the table. Our environment editor Greg Borschman reports.
$2.5 billion over 4 years. That's how much of taxpayer revenue has been set aside to cut carbon pollution 5% by 2020. And after the results of the first auction of the government's emission reduction fund were announced yesterday, it didn't take long for an argument to start about whether it's enough.
The core issue is that the government scheme caps the amount of emission reductions that can be achieved by the budget. It doesn't cap or limit emissions.
Erwin Jackson is Deputy CEO of the Climate Institute.
What we saw yesterday was that the government spent a quarter of the money it's got available, but even on, you know, some conservative assumptions, only delivers about 15% of what's required to meet its own target, let alone the more credible targets that people like the Climate Change Authority are recommending. Put another way, yesterday the scheme said it's going to deliver 47 million tonnes of emission reductions over 10 years, when, in fact, to achieve our target, we need to deliver 47 million tonnes of abatement every single year between now and 2020. Based on what we saw from the auction yesterday, the money that the government has put aside is insufficient, and that's supported by all the independent analysis that's been done to date.
But the government's bigger problem is the cost of reducing pollution in the longer term. Public submissions close today on what Australia's target for cutting carbon pollution should be beyond 2020. This is the new target that Australia will sign up for later this year at the UN climate meeting in Paris. Anna Starbeck is Executive Director of ClimateWorks Australia.
Australia can achieve and afford to reduce carbon emissions very substantially over the coming decades. For example, at 2030, that would mean that Australia could in fact reduce its emissions by 50% from the baseline years.
So this week, we also had the Climate Change Authority, and this sounds like it's pretty much in the same ballpark, recommending a 30% emissions reduction target for Australia by 2025. That's only 10 years away. Is the current approach, the emissions reduction fund that the government is committed to, going to buy us that sort of pollution reduction?
I think the understanding was that the current policy settings were designed for the government's 5% target to 2020, and that for actions beyond 2020, new or additional policy measures would be required.
So, climate groups, even industry, are expecting something other than the government's direct action plan after 2020, some sort of market mechanism. But Environment Minister Greg Hunt gave no hint of this yesterday. He was looking no further than 2020.
We will meet our targets. We will meet and beat our 2020 targets and have a system which will now reverberate around the world.
What happens after 2020 is critical because it will decide whether the world goes beyond 2 degrees of warming into the realm of dangerous climate change. That's why Australian scientist Matthew England has looked at more than 40 global climate models and 200 different climate simulations out to 2100. He wanted to know if the so-called pause in global warming over the past 10 or 15 years was significant. His answer is a resounding no.
The bad news story is this pause is no reason for comfort. It'll long be forgotten as greenhouse gases overwhelm that signal into the next few decades. It's like a cold front that comes through during summer. It doesn't end summer. This so-called pause is only 0.1 degree, so a tenth of a degree Celsius. We're expecting 5 degree C warming without greenhouse gases being reduced. So 50-fold warming compared to this hiatus. It's just a ridiculous distraction, actually.
Danish environmentalist Bjørn Lomborg has made the most of this distraction. He's soon to set up in Australia courtesy of a $4 million government grant. Last year, Lomborg pointed to this warming pause, saying it proved that the real challenge of global warming has been exaggerated. Lomborg claimed that almost all climate models are wrong. In his words, quote, running far too hot, unquote. But Matthew England's work, published overnight in the journal Nature Climate Change, debunks Lomborg's claims.
His views on climate change are worse than the worst student I've ever had at the university in terms of his understanding of basic climate physics. He's said some completely out there things. He doesn't understand climate physics. He's not a climate scientist. So it's a real shame.
Unlike the global warming pause, Matthew England says the deadly storm that hit New South Wales this week is not a distraction, more a sign of things to come. In 2009, the Commonwealth Department of Climate Change produced a national assessment of climate risks to Australia's coast. It specifically pointed to a damaging storm in June 2007 along the New South Wales coast. Known as the Pashabulka storm, it was described as a 1-in-100-year event. This week's storm was far worse, and it came just 8 years, not 100 years later. Matthew England.
The statistics of extremes are unambiguously changing. And what I mean by that is the return period. So this example of a 1-in-100-year storm, the fact that it's come in two of them within a decade just is an indication of the kinds of things we're seeing worldwide. Records are being broken far more frequently than they should be. The fact that the sea level is just getting higher and higher means that the impact on the coast becomes more and more. So sea level rise, increased intensity in the atmosphere, increased moisture as well, because there's actually more moisture in the atmosphere today than there was just 20 or 30 years ago. So all these things conspire to make these storms more extreme, and that's going to hit people with higher insurance premiums, big damage when the storms occur and so on.
That was Professor Matthew England, Chief Investigator with the ARC Centre of Excellence for Climate System Science, speaking there with our Environment Editor, Greg Borschmann.